task at hand. Era was such a big believer in, you know, a football term he uses, the point of attack. You had to concentrate on this task. And I think that really serves you well in the long run, is being able to say, hey, here's what I've got to do, and here's how I've got to do it. Get it done.
Talking with John Dampier and Frank Pomerico right now. We've got Tom Loy here as well, and he covers recruiting. And I know, John, we usually joke about your size playing offensive line in college. Tom's been doing a little digging, and I think has a couple of fun tidbits about you.
No, I'm actually just curious. What, when, you know, thinking back, obviously the recruiting process has changed slightly since when you guys were coming out. But what led you to Notre Dame? What, and who did you choose Notre Dame over? What other scholarship offers did you have at the time?
Well, I didn't have as many scholarship offers as most of the players like Frank. To get a lot of scholarship offers, you had to be great as a junior and then come back and be a great senior. I was a no-name as a junior, and then I had a great senior year. I was one of only two guys that was All-State in Texas both ways, and so I did that. So all of my choices were the Southwest Conference, Texas, Oklahoma. Well, Oklahoma wasn't in the conference. Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas were probably the ones that were there. I considered the Naval Academy. My vision is so bad. I was going to be very limited in what I could do. But I was going to, I'm going to tie two stories together. And one is what you were talking about, Era's character. Is my father was a heart surgeon, and he trained at a major teaching hospital. And he went through this recruiting process, and he said to me, he said, what do you think the difference is between a head football coach at a major university and the head of the hospital at a major teaching institution? I said, I don't know. He says, about 30 pounds. The coaches are bigger. It's that, you know that it factor? Well, you know, some of those guys have it. I came to Notre Dame for the academics. I knew I had a much better chance to get a good education if I came up here. And they let us know that. And so, yeah, that's why I came up here.
That's terrific. And Frank, I thought I read somewhere that you had chose Notre Dame over North Carolina. Is that accurate?
That's right. Yeah. I was pretty, very lucky. Okay. There was a fella that came to Notre Dame about 3 years before I did. His name was Larry DiNardo. And Larry and I went to the same grade school and high school. And his brother Jerry and I were classmates. So in 72 and 73, we were the guards at Notre Dame, which is kind of interesting, having two guys from the same grade school and high school playing guard at Notre Dame. But the thing that I always... Ara didn't even have to ask me if I wanted to come. I mean, I wanted to come here so badly. I mean, I could squat, deadlift, and bench press forever if it meant that I was going to come to Notre Dame. But Ara was looking for guys, and this is a common thread you'll find at Northwestern and also at Miami of Ohio, is that he was always looking for people that were hungry to be successful. Even Tom Gatewood, a great ball player, a great athlete, Ara never promised him a chance that he would start. He says, I'll give you an opportunity to start. And Tom liked that. And me, he didn't have to ask that because I was going to come no matter what. You know, I mean, this was my ultimate dream to come to Notre Dame. I mean, this was, academics were great, okay, but you can get great academics in North Carolina, too. They had a ton of girls at North Carolina, too, that they didn't at the time. And by the way, I was really against girls becoming part of Notre Dame until I had a daughter. And then my daughter graduated in 03. But I think when you have somebody like Ara Parsisian, when he walked into the room, as John says, there was that it factor. You're saying, I don't know who that guy is, but he is somebody special. He lit up the room. He had such charisma, and he had such awareness of what everything was going on in that room. And he knew a lot about people. When you were part of the Notre Dame team, you weren't just part of a team, you were part of a family. And he made you feel that way. It doesn't necessarily mean it was easy, but you knew that if you were giving your best, that he was going to fight tooth and nail for you. I'll give you one quick story. I wrote a book a couple years ago called Era's Knights, and which was great. But we found out a lot about Era in this book. One of the things that I talk about in the book is meeting Bo Schembechler for the first time. I used to sell Nautilus machines. And I said, the guy introduced me, says, this is Frank Pomerico. He was captain at Notre Dame. Bo looked at me and says, Notre Dame. What'd you bring a Notre Dame to deal with us for? A guy to deal with? I said, Coach, I did go to Notre Dame. I said, but I played for Aero Parsisian. I don't know why I said it, but I did. He says, son, you could stay all you want. He became my biggest customer. Every time I'd see him, I said, Coach Frank. He said, I know the heck you are. You're Harris guy. And there was that really deep appreciation and respect for both of them. And here's a story you may not know. It's in the book. But every Sunday, Era and Bo used to exchange game films. Bo used to look at Notre Dame and critique it. And Era used to critique Michigan. Oh, can you imagine that?
That's awesome.
I mean, when you think about how hard that, I mean, how tough that rivalry is, but yet they respected each other enough to be able to share each other's opinion about what was going on. So a lot of times people say, well, that Bo Schembechler, I says, hey, Bo's a good person, good guy. I mean, he treated me as well as Era did after I graduated. So I had an appreciation for the person. It's about people anyway. It's not about places. You know, every place is a good, can be a good place if the right people are there.
Frank, and where can people find that book?
At the bookstore.
Oh, awesome.
And also at Amazon.com. And if they need to get a hold of me, I have a website called set2.com.
Perfect. What's that, Evan Sharpline, WSBT's Game Day Show. Continue our football conversation with former Notre Dame offensive lineman Frank Pomerico and John Dampier. What's it been like for you guys to see Era's name on memorabilia now in the stadium? What's that tribute been like for you guys to see?
Well, I think he deserves every bit of recognition that he gets, and so I'm very glad to see it and see it on front of the helmets all season long. I think is appropriate and a good thing. So.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. He was such a humble guy. When I called him and I says, Coach, I'd like to talk to you about this book I'm writing. He says, hey, don't write a book about me. I said, Coach, it's already done. He says, don't write a book about me. There's been enough done about me. I said, Coach, we're going to do it. And it's going to be a great book because I've gone through every facet of your life and coaching career with this, and it's going to be really good. And it's for the guys, too. So, you know, it was something that he was such a humble guy, but to see now that he's getting this kind of recognition, it's maybe overdue. It should have happened a long time ago.
Well, I think it's a minor detail, but Era's statue is different than a lot of the others, and he chose it because it represented team. So there's three guys carrying him off the field, and so it's you know,
he's
it's
one of them.
but it's just it's what he chose. Right. I mean, you know, and it was a complete surprise to me. It just came out of left field. But I you know, he said, hey, this is a team sport. It's not one person who did this, and so.
Wow. Well, speaking of the team, let's bring it to today. John, what's been your overall assessment so far early on in this season? We could talk offensive line play, too. What have you seen from the Fighting Irish?
Well, they've stepped up this year. I mean, it's a big step up from I think they had more talent than they showed last year. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I think a big bit of concentration in doing that. I think McGlinchey coming back, and I think he had something to prove. I think, you know, Mike is a very talented guy, but he made some mental mistakes last year, and I think it bugged him. And he came back, and he is a leader, and I think it's showing. I think the offensive line has stepped up, and it's, for a couple of old linemen, it's fun to watch. Yeah.
Frank, what have you liked so far this year?
I tell you, John talked about a tackle. I'll talk about a guard. I had an opportunity to meet Quentin Nelson. And I was...
You're as big and flexible and strong as he is, right?
Oh, I came in to visit at the Goog, and I said, who is that guy? He says, Quentin Nelson. I said, he's the left guard, isn't he? I said, I'd like to meet him. He came up to me, and now he's 6'6", and I'm looking up at this guy, and I said, oh, my God, it's like an eclipse. I mean, this guy is blocking out the sun. He's 325 pounds. Barely shaving. You know, he was a terrific young man, very polite, very cordial. And I said, you know, I used to play guard here. He said, really? I says, yeah, I used to be a left guard. He says, no kidding, I'm a left guard. I says, I know. I said, I used to wear number 56, too. He says, that's what I wear. I says, the only thing, the numbers on you look a little smaller than they did on me.
Did you show him the championship ring, though, too?
No, I didn't. I don't like to bring that up unless it's, you know, I keep it in the back burner.
Well, before we let you guys go, John, give us your keys to today's game and if you'd like a score prediction.
Well, I think it is having the lines establish themselves. I mean, as a lineman, I think that's important. I think one of the other things that's important, and you have to be careful with a team like Miami, is it's one thing Aaron never did. We never lost to a team with less talent than we did. We were always ready. And it's a different mindset. So when we were preparing for a team like Miami, we knew we were better, and we knew we were going to win. Okay? But the coach on the other side is saying to his team, he said, you can beat Notre Dame and whatever. So our job was to come out and just kill them in the first quarter and have their players say, coach lied. We can't beat these guys. Then the game was over. And we did a pretty good job of that for the most part. You know, a couple of times we'd get in a dogfight that we shouldn't have been in. But if you come out and you're ready from the opening kickoff, it makes it a lot easier game.
Yeah, I think that Notre Dame should win this game today. One of the games that I always think about when I think about a team that has less talent is playing against Missouri. And the week before, this is 1972, they get beat 62-6 by Nebraska. So we're thinking, well, we'll throw a helmet on the field and we'll win. We get beat 30-28, something like that. And there was a couple of bad calls in there. But you just never know what's going to happen. So you really have to put your nose to the grindstone and make sure that none of that stuff happens. You know, you got to really play hard. And if you don't, some bad things can happen. So, you know, I just think that the Irish should win. I say by 3 touchdowns.
You and the bookies.
Yeah, 21 and a half, I think. Well, John, Frank, thank you so much for taking some time. It's always great when you guys are on the show. Enjoy it. Grab some more barbecue. Hang around. We'll talk, I'm sure, again real soon.
Evan, we beat Marshall this year, too. Lumen Christie beat Marshall.
All right. Well, this is WSBT's Game Day Show, live from the porch of the Ivy Court. And it's Suites. To get a reservation for your out-of-town guests or to book your own getaway, call the Ivy Court team at 574-277-6500. We'll be right back with more football talk on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT.
This is former tight end Robin Weber. My job was to catch footballs. Yours is to catch every Notre Dame game right here on your home for Fighting Irish football, WSBT.
Welcome back to the game alongside Tom Loy on your home for Fighting Irish football, 96.1 FM, 960 AM, WSBT. Our show is also brought to you by Hearth and Home, Kurt Outdoor Living, LKQ Pick Your Part, and Zolman's Auto and Tire. Before we get to talking a little Irish recruiting with Tom Loy, we have another guest sitting here with us, my four-month-old Lucy, who's picking a big Irish win today. She's got her Notre Dame jersey on, and she's ready to go in this beautiful weather. So thanks, Lucy, for stopping by. Well, Tom, give us the update real quick on Irish recruiting, where they stand right now with the current class, and maybe a few guys with some names maybe that Irish fans should pay attention to.
Well, Notre Dame has the number 8 overall class according to the 24/7 Sports Team composite rankings. Not too shabby, I'll say that. But I think it starts at the top, and you, as you know, a former quarterback, Phil Dracovic. What an impressive talent. He is just putting up huge numbers week in and week out. This guy's 6'4 and a half, 220 pounds. Just a really, really talented kid. A dual threat guy that will step into this offense and just make plays immediately. He may not have the most polished arm right now, but given time, I mean, he's going to make a ton of plays at Notre Dame and with the surrounding talent.
The quarterback position is always worth discussing, and sometimes worth discussing too is who is ahead of a guy like Phil. Where do you see Ian Book, Avery Davis fit into that situation with a guy once Phil's on campus as well?
Phil's going to be tough to beat out. But, you know, I mean, we've talked about this for a long time. I'm a big Ian Book fan. So what he does in the spring game, what he does if he needs to play today or later this year, it doesn't surprise me. He is a very talented kid. Sure, he's not 6'4 and a half, 220 pounds. But you know what? I like kids who know how to play football, and I like kids who know how to play the quarterback position and are smart, and Ian Book fits that mold. So I think Notre Dame fans should have no concerns over him taking over eventually for Wimbush, but it's not going to be a job that's just handed to Phil. He's going to have to earn it. So between Book and Avery Davis, who is an absolutely electric athlete and the best runner on the team at this point, even better in my opinion than Brandon Wimbush is, it's going to be a tough battle for the next couple of years.
Tom, before the season started, safety was a position of concern at Notre Dame. Nick Coleman has been really one of the surprises on this Irish defense, the way that he's played early on here through the first half of the season. Are there reinforcements coming in that can create some depth within the safety and the secondary?
Man, you're not going to find too many better in the 2018 class than Derek Allen, a four-star top 100 safety out of Georgia, U.S. Army All-American, just 6'2", 210, 215 pounds, very, very intelligent. He's a football player, man. He can play linebacker. He can play that rover role. He'll play safety. When Mike Elko got to Notre Dame, this was the guy he wanted. There was no question about who the top target was defensively. Derek Allen is a guy that will make a ton of plays at Notre Dame. Again, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be at safety or what position, which safety spot. Could continue to add weight and play rover. My gut says he stays at safety. Like I said, Elko got his man, and this kid is an absolute dog at the position. So he's a guy that could play right now for Notre Dame. That's how talented he is.
I'm Evan Sharpley with 24/7 Sports analyst, recruiting analyst Tom Loy, here on the porch of the Ivy Court Inn and Suites with WSBT's Game Day Show. With the addition, Tom, of Mike Elko this year, bringing in Clark Lea with the linebackers and some of these personnel shifts within the staff, what has recruiting has that shifted? Has that changed the type of player that, say, Mike Elko and his staff are earmarking as guys that they'd like within their scheme? How has that changed since he's arrived on campus this past January?
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of joking about how, like, when Bob Diaco was here, Sean Crawford was not going to be on this roster right now. I mean,
and Kelly admitted that this week, too.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you were paying attention to Irish 24/7, you knew all the backstory there. But yeah, until Van Gorder got here, he was never a take, which is just pretty funny to think about. But then when you shift now to where Elko's at, size size did matter to Van Gorder. It was important, but not nearly as important as it was to Diaco. But with Elko, this guy just wants football players. He wants guys that are going to go out, make plays, be in the right position, and are smart enough to handle what's thrown at them. Now, Elko's not going to go crazy and make things so difficult that where Notre Dame players are telling me after that loss to USC a couple years ago under Van Gorder, I have no idea what I'm doing out there. We're talking the last game of the season. That's not going to happen to Elko. He keeps things simple, to the point, and whatever, it's working. They're holding guys under 20 points. So in terms of the player they're recruiting smart guys, but they just want good football players. Size matters. If you're looking at a rover position, they want somebody with length, somebody that has good sideline to sideline speed. But honestly, these guys just want to win football games, and they know they have to win now. So they want guys that can come in, play right away, and just make plays.
Let's jump over to the offensive side of the ball. Chip Long is the new offensive coordinator. You mentioned Jerkovic, the quarterback here in the 2018 class. Who are a couple other guys that Irish fans should be paying attention to over the course probably of the next two or three years could be on the field?
Man, Kevin Austin, he's a four-star wide receiver, committed right now. He's a baller. I don't know how else to put him. I mean, he had over three. Now, mind you, let me just preface this. The talent he's playing against right now is not the best, but he should put up the numbers that he does. He had over 360 receiving yards and 5 touchdowns this week. I mean, that's a video game. Maybe that's a couple games on a video game.
Create a player.
You could have probably used him back in high school. This guy is a special talent, 6'3", 200 pounds. He's a dynamic playmaker. There's a couple guys that Notre Dame really wanted at wide receiver. They got one of them in Kevin Austin. The other one that is Equanimeous, his little brother, Amon-Ra St. Brown, just a big-time talent, another U.S. Army All-American. So they're going to keep pushing hard for him, but I really like what they brought it in Austin. You look at running back, Marquise Stepp, a four-star running back out of Indiana, goes to Cathedral High School in Indianapolis. He's been banged up over the last couple of years, and he's banged up right now with an ankle injury. He's a guy that's like 6 foot, 220 plus pounds. He's a guy that will step in and compete right away for playing time. They've churned out some really good running backs lately, so Stepp's just another one. And Jameer Smith, who is a guy that I think is one of the more underrated running backs in the country, close to 6 feet, 200 pounds, just a really good running back, good football player. So he's another guy that probably is the speed to Stepp's size. And great compliments for each other. So I really like what they did. George Takkus at tight end. Chip Long loves his tight ends. He's got some really good ones on campus right now. George Takkus, another U.S. Army All-American, 6'7", maybe 6'6", 240 pounds, good player. In the passing game, helps in the run game, just a versatile guy. So he's going to fit right in nicely with the likes of Brock Wright, Cole Kmet when he gets on campus.
Tom, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk to you about your keys to an Irish victory today. You're listening to Notre Dame Football on 96.1 FM, 960 AM, WSBT. Game Day Show with Evan Sharpley on your home for Irish football, 96.1 FM, 960 AM, WSBT. The Game Day Show is brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air. Call Legacy to tune up your furnace before it leaves you in the cold. And Fisher's Tips and Chips. Check out their new location next to the State Line Dairy Queen in Niles. And there's free food here at Ivy Court and Suites for the first 150 fans during the show. Or you can check them out at fishersbbq.net. Sitting here with my co-host Tom Loy. My producer Tim Growl is out of town this week, and we will be back next week for the North Carolina game. And we also have our third co-host, Lucy Sharpley, my four-month-old daughter, hanging out with us today as well. Well, Tom, the countdown to kickoff has begun. Give me your keys to the game and a score prediction for this afternoon with kickoff being at 5 p.m.
Well, I think the number one key is, and I know that it's very unlikely Dexter Williams plays today, but to be quite honest, I'm not sure he needs to. My number one key is run the football. I mean, let's get Josh Adams some carries. I wouldn't mind seeing him over 20 for the day or right around 20. But I think you need to put the ball in his hands, create some plays, maybe slow the clock down a little bit. I mean, obviously, he likes to break 60-yarders, so you never know if you're going to have a long drive with him. But I'd also like to see them get the ball in Tony Jones Jr.'s hands. Get him an entire series.
And we saw Deion McIntosh.
Yeah, I was
going to
say him as well. But I really want to see Tony get some carries instead of just coming in on third down, things like that, some spot duty. I'd like to see him really get treated as a 1B back, whatever. And I'd like to see him get some carries. I'd like to see Deion McIntosh get the ball. I mean, that kid, he's more explosive than I even thought. And he showed that against Michigan State. So I don't think you're going to lose too much when you go from Dexter to Deion. So I'd like to see them pound the rock. And then also, I think my next one, I'd probably say defensively, I think they're going to have to get pressure. And I don't have that as a concern by any stretch. So I think that they're going to be able to get pressure. I'd like to see Dalen Hayes get to the quarterback, maybe get his sack numbers up a little bit. He's been so close, and he's creating turnovers. I mean, he's a playmaker off the edge and just a dynamic weapon. So I'd like to see him maybe actually just get some numbers under his belt. Jerry Tillery, he has had a very underrated season. I think that he's not getting a lot of credit where he should be. Jay Hayes, I'd like to see him get his numbers up there. So I think if they can pressure Gus Ragland into some turnovers, obviously, the key is to win the turnover battle. But I just really like Notre Dame today. I don't see any concerns. Last year, it'd be a little different. The mentality of this group is so different this year under Brian Kelly and Mike Elko and Chip Long and all the other changes on the staff. It's a completely different team. So I have absolutely no concerns over Notre Dame getting a victory today. You know, we were talking earlier, you said the 21.5 point spread. I have no reason to think that they can't cover that. So I actually think that Notre Dame's gonna put a 50 spot on Miami of Ohio.
Half 100?
And yes, also known as half 100. Matt, this guy went to Notre Dame, ladies and gentlemen. This guy gets it. So, I'm thinking somewhere along the lines of 52-17, right around that margin, in a comfortable Notre Dame victory.
Well, I'll echo a few of your sentiments as well for my keys to the game and repeat one that John Dampier mentioned earlier as well, and that's starting fast. You know, you have a team that's going to come in with likely quite a bit of excitement. They're going to try to throw a lot of their tricks, the kitchen sink, as it were, potentially on the offensive side of the ball. They don't have anything to lose, and sometimes those can be dangerous teams. Notre Dame's got to have a business-like mentality and take care of business early. I liken it to what Frank Pomerico said is you have that clenched tight fist. Well, you got to punch them in the mouth real early and set the tone. On defense, what I wrote down too is pressuring the quarterback. Miami of Ohio has a pretty talented quarterback in Gus Ragland, who really was the catalyst last year to them closing out the season on a very nice note. They beat Central Michigan last week. They're sitting 2-2 right now. I think if they're able to take him out of the game to a certain extent, then you know obviously you're going to put yourself in a good position to win football games. Notre Dame has been great on third down. They've created turnovers, so I'm excited about that. And then lastly, balance on the offensive side. Notre Dame is going to have Kevin Stefferson back today on offense that could provide a vertical threat. But I'd like to see a balance of the run and the pass. Brandon Winbush proved that, you know, he's getting better as a thrower, and we've seen what Notre Dame has been able to do against teams where they should be able to run the football, a la Temple, a la Boston College. So I've got a 42-17 Notre Dame victory. I want to thank our guests today, Miami of Ohio President Greg Crawford, Cindy Parsegian, John Dampier, and Frank Pomerico for joining us today. And a big thank you to my friend Tom Loy for helping in Tim's absence. We couldn't do the show without Matt Embry back at the studio and our on-site engineer Jeremy. Thanks, guys. And there's still time to stop out and try the delicious Fisher's Tips and Chips Barbecue. Big thanks to Rob for all the food. And please plan to join Tim and I next week at 11 a.m. as we'll be back in the studio to get you ready for North Carolina. And don't go anywhere as Fighting Irish football coverage continues. Right after the news, it's Darren, Sean, and Eric previewing today's game on Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat. Immediately following them, it will be the official Notre Dame pregame show. Then it's kickoff at just after 5 p.m. with Don Crickey and Alan Pickett on the IMG Network. Remember, the game is not on the NBC Network with NBC Sports, so this is a good place to listen. All of this on your home for Fighting Irish football, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Dame Home Games Saturday continues with WSBT Game Day, live from Ivy Court Inn and Suites. Here is your host, Evan Sharpley.
And we're back. It's the Game Day Show with Evan Sharpley. Brian Kelly and the Irish beat Michigan State 38-18 last weekend in East Lansing. The Irish defense forced three turnovers that resulted in 21 points. And prior to kickoff, we talked about three keys for the game. I said if Notre Dame was able to stop the Spartan rushing attack, execute a balanced attack on offense, and win the turnover margin to expect to win, and that was pretty spot on, I'd say. The play of the Irish front seven was critical in last week's physical matchup, and the Spartans controlled the ball to a certain extent, did eat up some clock, but Notre Dame competed at the line of scrimmage and forced some timely turnovers. Julian Love jumped a route early in the game and took the ball for six. We had Sean Crawford's forced fumble on the 1 yard line and a recovery in the end zone. Really kind of epitomizes the style of play defensive coordinator Mike Elko has been preaching to his squad so far this season. The defensive line continued to impress, and while this group is not putting up huge pass rush numbers yet, it has allowed the Irish linebackers to perform at a very high level. Niles Morgan, Devon Coney, Greer Martini, and Drew Tranquil have been atop the team in tackles and tackles for loss each week, in large part to the play of this defensive line. Love and Crawford have a knack for being around the ball, and Nick Watkins is quietly having a strong 2017 campaign, playing well in coverage. And while the Spartans did have more success on third downs than the previous three Irish opponents, the Spartans did have to become one-dimensional. I felt like if Brian Lewerke had to complete 20-plus throws, Notre Dame would be in good shape defensively. He had to throw the ball 51 times. In a game where possessions were limited, we were looking for a balanced attack from the Irish offense. Scoring touchdowns instead of kicking field goals was huge, and the Spartans ran 85 plays compared to Notre Dame's 60. Brandon Winbush had struggled to throw the ball with consistency early on in the season, but was very efficient last week in East Lansing, completing 70% of his passes. It did help to have another wide receiver in the mix, and Chase Claypool makes some big plays to balance out with Equanimeous St. Brown. That offensive attack saw Winbush and company rush for 182 yards and pass for 173. Dexter Williams, who is out today, turned in a solid performance rushing the ball with one touchdown and a great catch in the corner of the end zone from Winbush for another touchdown. The Irish again turned those three turnovers into 21 points, and now in the red zone, another great performance. They're right at 90% as far as touchdown rate inside the 20. Notre Dame is back in South Bend today with a home tilt against the Miami Redhawks. Kickoff is set for 5 p.m. But for the next hour, I'm Evan Sharpley, and I'm your host. And if this is your first time tuning in, this show is about setting the atmosphere and giving you a feel for the game day experience, talking with former Irish players, and discussing some X's and O's. Today, we'll continue our tribute to Coach Eric Parsegian, and riding shotgun with me in the absence of my producer, Tim Growl, is my coworker from Irish247.com. Tom Loy. Tom, it's good to see you. It's a beautiful day here in South Bend. Are you ready for some football?
I am. I appreciate you having me on, man. I'm excited to be here, and it should be a fun one for Notre Dame fans today with kickoff scheduled at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, well, we've got a great set of guests today. We're going to have the president of Miami of Ohio, Dr. Greg Crawford, here, as well as Cindy Parsegian. We'll have a couple of former players from 1972 and 1973, John Dampier and Frank Pomerico. Tom, real quick before we get to our guests, tell me just your early season impressions of Notre Dame and what you're thinking for today.
Well, I really like what Notre Dame's done so far this year. I absolutely love what they've done defensively. I feel like I was leading the Mike Elko train as he came over from Wake Forest as the new defensive coordinator, and he has been terrific. What a great addition they had, and obviously it didn't need much to improve from Brian Van Gorder, but you know what? After what they've done against Temple, Georgia, BC, and Michigan State, it's been a terrific effort, and I think that's probably the highlight of the season is the defensive effort led by Elko.
I'd agree, and I think, you know, expectations continue to be high. USC lost a game last week, and Notre Dame really, if they could win these next two games, would be in a good position with USC coming to town in a couple of weeks following a bye. But certainly, you know, that level of play has been raised. The defense has played very well. You know, it still has the makings of what could be a very special season if they can put some things together and make a run late in the season.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I love what they've done offensively. Chip Long's doing a great job. Play calling's been nice. Brandon Wimbush is slowly, you know, becoming the guy, and he's getting better every week. So I think this will be a nice game for him today.
Well, let's get to our guests. We have Dr. Greg Crawford, the president of Miami of Ohio. Greg, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having us.
We're very excited to talk to you. And then we have Cindy Parsegian as well. Thank you so much. Sorry for your loss. But we're very excited to sit down and talk with you guys today and kind of get a pulse for what's going on, the Miami-Notre Dame connection, and hopefully hear some great stories from you. And first, Dr. Crawford, could you just talk to us a little bit about your time at Notre Dame?
Sure.
And then kind of your path to Miami of Ohio and now here today again on campus. Beautiful day. What's that like for you?
Sure, it's been fantastic. So in 2008, I joined Notre Dame as Dean of Science. So then right off the bat, we had a rare disease program going on at Notre Dame, and we studied Niemann-Pick, of course. And even before I had a chance of getting started at Notre Dame, I wanted to go and meet the Parsegians because I heard their story and their loss of their three children, Cindy and Mike, the parents, whose Cindy's with us today. And then I wanted to get involved as dean, and so I did a lot of different fundraisers with them. And then after 8 years and getting to know Coach very well, I got an offer from Miami to become their next president. And I had to go tell Coach that. And you know Coach is a Miami alum.
Right, yeah.
And so I told him, and he said, well, Greg, if you're going to go, that's the only place I'm going to let you go. So it's just been a terrific run, and we were just so inspired by the Parsegian family and the story, and just Renata and I, my wife, we just wanted to be a part of the fundraising effort to help those kids with Niemann-Pick.
Cindy, what's it been like getting to know Dr. Crawford and that relationship that you guys have built and all the research that's been going on? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, first let me talk about Greg. when he came on board, I never expected that he would not only support us on the research front, but that he would personally get involved in the fundraising efforts. I don't know, but if you know this, he rode his bike across country five times for us.
I've seen that.
15,000 miles and raised several million dollars for us.
It's unbelievable.
So his heart is in it, along with his incredible brilliance as a researcher and as the dean of the College of Science. And now he's still committed to us. We had a fundraiser last night with the Miami, Ohio group, and I think that's pretty unique that two competing schools would come together to support our mission. So we're blessed that Greg is still involved, and we're never going to let go of him, even if he's wearing red today.
And where can people find more information about the research, about getting involved and helping out? Obviously, you mentioned the biking across. I don't know, Tom, you think you're in for that too?
I mean, I run a lot, but I don't think I can bike that long.
You know, one big thing that's happened this last year is we merged our foundation with a fund here at Notre Dame.
Okay.
So you can find us at Notre Dame. You can just go into Notre Dame page and put in Parsigian Fund, and you'll find us. And it's been a great marriage. Our momentum is continuing. Our research efforts are non-stop. We're just really pleased that we now have the strength and the support of Notre Dame behind all of our research efforts.
This is the WSBT's Game Day Show, and we're talking with the Miami of Ohio President Greg Crawford and Cindy Parsigian. Again, you know, very sorry about your loss. What has the outpouring of support been like? What's it been like to see ERA on, even on Miami of Ohio, that there's the sticker on the back of the helmet, on the helmet of Notre Dame? What's that been like this year for you guys?
Well, I think it's reflective of the Notre Dame community. ERA was such a huge part of the aura of Notre Dame and what it really stands for. And I think that the fact that everyone wants to honor him is just a testament to what an incredible man he was. And I think it's also reflective of the support we've had from the Notre Dame community. We have made just great strides in the research progress. We have a drug right now that's in a phase 2-3 trial, and it'll end next March. The data will be analyzed, and then I'm really expecting this drug to be approved. And so that will be the first real therapy that we have for children. And it's not a cure. Mm-hmm. So we have to keep the research going, the momentum going, but it's going to help children. It's going to improve their life, and it's going to make their lives last longer.
What a great legacy to leave, and what we've found, you know, we've had players and other coaches come on each week and talk, and we've asked them to try to come up with one story that would maybe encapsulate Coach and kind of either what he meant to them or to describe his character, his leadership. Finding one story has been pretty difficult. Is there one story or one experience that maybe sticks out to you?
Well, I think we had this fundraiser last night, and it came up there again. And ERA always wanted to make sure that everyone realized that it was an army of volunteers that made our foundation successful and made the research progress. And he never wanted to be known as one more victory for ERA. He wanted it to be a victory for all Neiman Pick children, for all parents that had children affected by it, and all grandparents. And so for me right now, that's what really sticks in my mind, the fact that he really wanted to recognize how many people had moved this research forward.
Dr. Crawford, what about you?
Well, just, Coach, if you knew him, his incredible grace and humility and courage and so forth, that came out in everything that he did, and he never said no to anybody or anything. He would just give his time freely and help out with the cause and so forth, and he's just an incredible human being. But on a personal story, I grew up in Cleveland and always wanted to play for Coach growing up, and didn't quite have the genetics going for me, of course, but in any event, I'll never forget after one of my bike rides, it was the last one I did, and I went over to the house to say hello, and then I was back in town and something, and he said, "How's my fullback doing?" And I smiled for a week. I was so excited.
Well, you mentioned maybe not having the genetics there, being in, you know, chemical science, entrepreneur. You hold 21 patents, if I'm correct, as well. I was very interested in that. What are a couple of those patents, if you are able to talk about those?
Sure. No, when I was going through my professorial rank career and so forth, and did a lot with flat panel displays, so the kind of things you see on your laptop computers. And then later in my career, when I was still active in research, did a lot with biomedical devices, from hemoglobin all the way through drug discovery on the sensor side of things.
Awesome. Yeah. And now bringing it to today, what's it like being back on campus now, wearing red?
I'm wearing red today, so that's where my loyalty is, of course. But it was great. We had the wonderful event for Coach to celebrate his life last night, and it was just great to see Miami and Notre Dame come together and hear the wonderful stories and share all of our experiences that we had with Coach over the past several years with the folks that visited us last.
So still fairly new in your role, hired in 2016, correct?
Yeah,
What has kind of been, you know, with Notre Dame being on the schedule, what is your role in being, you know, being some of these different events? Was your hand in some of those types of things?
Not really. It was more Coach Martin, because when the coach gets the chance to leave and take on a head coaching job, Notre Dame always tries to schedule that team, so it was nice. But I got to go pretty soon to call plays on the sideline.
You do?
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes.
Can we get some inside information on what those might be?
We're going to pull everything out of the trick book we possibly can, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Again, Cindy, if we could, just people can go to the Notre Dame website and find out information. Is there a website or anything else where they can go to donate money, to help in any way?
The Parsegian Fund.
Parsegian Fund, okay.
At NDU.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. We appreciate you taking some time today to sit down and talk with us. Enjoy this beautiful weather, and I guess hopefully see an Irish win. And
Hey.
We'll always be thankful for this gentleman, no matter what color he wears.
Well, we thank you so much for your time. Have a great day.
Thank you.
This is the WSBT Game Day Show, live from the porch of Ivy Court Inn and Suites. To get a reservation for your out-of-town guests or to book your own getaway, call the Ivy Court team at 574-277-6500. We'll be right back to talk more football on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT.
May I have your attention, please? This is Tim McCarthy for the Indiana State Police. You're listening to WSBT, your radio home for Notre Dame football.
This is the Game Day Show with Evan Sharpley on your home for Fighting Irish Football, 96.1 FM, 960 AM, WSBT. We're also brought to you by Budweiser and United Beverage, Carmella's at McCree's, Creative Colors International, and the Food Bank of Indiana, Northern Indiana. I'm joined by my partner and co-host today, Tom Loy from Irish247.com. Tom, it's always great to hear those stories of Coach, and obviously a tremendous tribute having Dr. Greg Crawford and Cindy Parsegian and all the great things that they're doing as far as research goes for the Neiman Pick Foundation and that rare type C disease. It's wonderful to hear the stories of Coach and kind of the legacy that he's been leaving.
Yeah, it's impressive, man. I feel like that was a couple minutes, but I feel like I learned so much. And the bike ride raising over a couple $1 million. I mean, it's impressive. I mean, ever since I jumped on the Notre Dame beat years ago, I mean, everybody talked about Era, and it was it's been great just spending time with people who knew him, who related to him. You learned so much.
And speaking of great causes, before we get to our next two guests, John Dampier and Frank Pomerico, we have Troy Nussbaum, who is partnered up. He's doing the Men in Kilts campaign with the Ronald McDonald House, and he's parking cars today and just has a quick PSA that if you guys are in the area and would like to help out, his campaign is, well, we got about a week left. Troy, give us the 411 on what's going on.
Yeah, so thanks for having me on. I appreciate it very much. So we're parking cars today over here off of State Road 23, right in front of Tap House on the Edge and Studebagels. All proceeds that we're raising today are going towards Ronald McDonald House Charities. I think what's more important is all the proceeds are staying right here in Michiana, helping these families. The Ronald McDonald House, what it does is it provides a resource for a place of a little bit of normalcy, a little bit of comfort for families that have sick and injured children in the hospital. You know, I think about this, 29 regional centers and urgent care centers refer families to the Ronald McDonald House. Many of those places are an hour and a half away. So I think you have a sick child, you have an injured child, the last thing you want to do is drive an hour home to go take a shower, to go get some rest. Ronald McDonald House lets you come upstairs, you got a bed to sleep in, you got a shower, you got food prepared for you. Best part about it is zero charge to the families. They've had families stay there as many as 11 months, lived in the house, and have had a zero charge. So great cause. Excited to do it. Come see us down at Studebagels and help us raise some money.
Studebagels. All right. Thank you, Troy. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it very much, guys. Thank you.
Enjoy this. You're looking good in your kilt. Hopefully you get some sun on those legs, huh?
Well, the legs are looking good from Sharpley training.
There we go. All right, well, next up, we're going to have two former players from the 1972 and 73 team. We're going to have offensive lineman John Dampier, both captains, and then Frank Pomerico as well, to sit here and talk, share some stories that they have of Coach Parsegian. It looks like we've got some Fisher's Tips and Chips barbecue that just sat down at the table, too, that Frank has.
How you doing?
Great. You got to put your headset on so we can hear you.
Exactly.
John, how are you today? Well, again, thanks, guys, for sitting down and talking. We just had Cindy Parsegian out. We had Dr. Greg Crawford talking about Coach Parsegian a little bit. What's it been like since his passing? And what memories came to mind right away for you, John?
Well, there are a lot of memories, but I guess the thing that I wanted to share is about 15, 20 years ago, Tom Brokaw wrote the book, The Greatest Generation. Mm-hmm. Well, Era belonged to that generation. The three most important people in my life were my father, my father-in-law, and Era. And they were all the greatest generation. My dad was Army. My father-in-law was Air Force. Era was Navy. They did their job, and they came back and made an impact.
Mm-hmm.
And Era was really, I mean, I can tell you all sorts of football stories, but, you know, Era the man was the... That was the most important thing.
Did he bring that military background into the conversations he had, into the way he structured practices?
He really didn't. I didn't think that he... I don't think he did that. I mean, when we were there, he did bring a Navy guy to practice one time who had had a really tough situation. So, yeah, you were kind of vaguely aware of it, but none of those guys, Evan, ever mentioned it. I mean, it was, they did their job, and then they came back and did whatever job they were doing, and his job was to coach.
Well, this is Evan Sharpley and Tom Loy. We're here on the porch of Ivy Court Inn and Suites with the WSBT's Game Day Show. We've got Fisher's Tips and Chips Barbecue for the first 150 people for free. I usually don't get to eat right away, so if you guys can get to it before I do, then there's plenty of food. Frank, you've already got to. How's the barbecue?
It's delicious.
It's delicious.
Sausages are great, too.
well, now your turn. Talk to us a little bit about, once Coach Parsegian passed, you know, what that felt like, what memories came flooding back, and your experiences with him.
You know, one of the first things that I remember is when Ari used to talk to us before the season would start, and he talked about what it takes to win and how... He would describe it as having a tight fist. And if you hit somebody with a tight fist, it's going to be very effective. And now if you have a limped fist or an open hand, it's not going to be nearly as effective. So therefore, you have all this bonds of loyalty and trust with each other. And if that tight fit is always there, then you have a tendency to be strong in the uniting of everything that you guys are trying to do. Everybody's kind of on the same page. Now, as far as military stuff is concerned, you know, I don't know if it was a military thinking in that, you know, it was a regiment. But I don't know as so much as a military thing. But Eric could have been a governor, a mm-hmm. senator. He could have been the president of the United States. That's how well organized he was, and that's how charismatic he was. John, do you remember the Thursday and Friday night, right after practice, he would give these little talks? And they weren't always about football.
Oh, no.
They were about character. They were about making the right choices in life. And you'd say to yourself, God, I wish I had a recorder. That was some great stuff.
And when he gave us that poem of the man in the glass and said, hey, mm-hmm. that every player probably still has that. You know, and it's...
Actually, I didn't have that because that was for the Cotton Bowl, I think, in 71.
Okay, so before you got started, okay.
But I know what it's about, and the man in the glass is that you are looking at yourself, right. And are you lying to yourself? Are you somebody that's trying to fool yourself? Forget about fooling everybody else, but are you fooling yourself? Can you look in the glass and say, hey, I did the best I could?
One common thread that we've heard over the last few weeks is character, is organization, is structure, leadership. Both you guys were captains. Were there certain things that you learned or pulled from his style that you were able to infuse either in your teammates, but then once you left university, just in your own personal day-to-day interactions with people as well?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's... believing completely in yourself and doing